have you been? How have your mornings been so far?
Has Mike? It seems like Mike's got something to hide.
He does, doesn't he? Mike looks like he's...
Like, what's Mike been up to this morning?
Mike looks like he potentially has a mass murder to hide.
Well, I picked up some turds.
Oh, God.
I mean, in terms of what Pam did to the gasser, mass murder isn't too far off it.
Have you been on a Pam walk?
But yeah, a little one. I'll take her on a big one later.
Pam. 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 Pam.
Good girl, Pam. Good girl, Pam. Oh, Pam.
Pam. Pam. Pam. Pam. Pam. Pam. No. Pam. 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 So how many times a day do you walk Pam?
A few times, I'd say, typically. There's got to be one chunko, at least, big one, and then a couple of, smaller.
So will you tend to do the morning one? Will that tend to be you, or does it vary?
Well, it varies, but yeah, quite often, yeah. Cover my town with turds.
And you're keeping all the turds, aren't you? There's a turd pyramid in your back garden.
That's correct, yeah.
That's 3 years of turds.
Yeah.
Yeah, which people can come and see. Yeah, it's £2.49 per person. Kids go free.
Yeah. And also there's something for the dads, isn't there? You've made some lewd, lewd sculptures out of turds, haven't you? Out of dog turds.
We have, yes, the turd dick wall is quite the talk of the town in these parts.
Yeah. He'll probably win the Turner Prize. And be one of their best recent winners, probably.
It feels like that kind of Philistine take on the Turner Prize is slightly ebbed off in recent years.
I'm still betting the flame for it. Yeah. there's still a small, tight, and really dedicated community, Ben, that do still tut at the Turner Prize every year.
Okay.
So you can't get rid of us that easily.
Yeah. They believe if you're chopping a cow in half, it should be purely for agricultural reasons.
Yeah, exactly. Or to teach a lesson to a child, for example, as a warning.
Or to get your keys back.
Or to hide if you're cornered by the bailiffs, for example. Mm-hmm. But for art, don't think so. Realistic picture of a jug, please. Thank you. Every time.
Still lifes are rubbish, aren't they? That's going to be my take, is that the still life, like bowl of fruit or whatever, that is rubbish compared to anything in the Turner Prize. Is there a good one ever? There's that one where there's like some fruit and a lute. Do you know that one? It's quite famous.
There's one with some sunflowers in that I've heard of. That's quite famous, I think.
Yeah, that's rubbish.
It's a bit weird, isn't it, that you choose to just arrange some fruit on a table and paint that?
There must be some thinking behind it, wasn't there? Like, where did it come from? You're the art person, Henry. You should know this.
I should, shouldn't I? I've got absolutely no idea. In a way, it's a shame, isn't it? Because it'd be a much more interesting cultural record. Because it's like a glimpse into the past.
Yeah.
If they'd done a painting of like their underwear drawer or their shower or like their stuff. But instead, no, I'm going to arrange some fruit on a table and paint
that. What's in the poorly organised kitchen drawer? For example.
Exactly.
Yeah. What's the medieval equivalent of some used batteries? Some batteries that you're not sure if they're used or not.
Did Hans Holbein the Elder have a zester? We'll never know.
He didn't use for 5 years, but wouldn't throw away.
You're right, Henry. The pile of fruit is the one thing that probably hasn't changed. You know, that looks the same in 2024 than it does in...
And vases are still old-fashioned looking now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not jugs.
Jugs look exactly the same. They're basically like medieval technology, aren't they?
Yeah, so what was going on with still life? It feels a bit more like... It feels like it should be more like a thing you do to train. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
So you can master, light coming off an orange or whatever.
Is it the equivalent of a sort of taking a picture of your meal on Instagram or something slightly? Is it like...
Well, like, check me out, I've got a pear.
Yeah. Look at me, I've got a pomegranate and three metal jugs and a pewter dish.
I'm living my best medieval life.
I've also got a skull with a candle in the top.
It's not all medievals, though, is it? Because there's that Andy Warhol one of a banana.
That one I've always struggled to work out why that's good.
Isn't it? It's a Velvet Underground cover, is it?
Well, yeah, but I think they used it as a cover.
Right, I see.
Because they thought it was so good.
It is good, though, isn't it?
But it's just a picture of a banana.
But it's good.
Can I say, it's in the category of, if no one had ever done that, and I put it out on Twitter tomorrow.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd get a lot of traction for that. Would I throw that picture of a banana? Would I become the coolest person in New York? Would people be flocking to my nightclub? I just don't think I would. Which brings me on to the new Banksy.
Oh, yeah, there is a new Banksy.
There's a new Banksy.
Yeah. Is there?
Yeah, it's quite near. I think it's probably quite near me. Yeah, there's a new Banksy.
What are they called?
What?
What do you mean? Oh, you mean as in there's a new... I thought you meant as in there's a new person.
As a new Banksy, like, in town.
No. There's Banksy's done a new... What are our thoughts on Banksy, by the way?
Tosser. I don't really think that. I thought it would be funny to say that.
No, it's quite funny to say that.
I'm not a big Banksy fan, though, really. I've got no problem with him at all.
My only problem with Banksy is it's always a bit like, look, it's a policeman, but with the head of a dolphin. Oh, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Oh, it's a tank, but instead, out of the big gun bit at the end, you know what's coming out of it?
It's firing mothers.
It's a mother tank. Oh, right, yeah.
I do quite admire him for sticking to his anonymity guns.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's true.
I think most people would have cracked by now.
Obviously, it could be any of us, couldn't it?
Well, isn't he from Bristol? Isn't that the thing that everyone knows?
Where we're doing a live show soon.
Yeah, Banksy is like, yeah, I like the fact he exists. I like the fact he's kept it secret.
Mm. Yeah.
It's always quite good fun when a new one pops up.
It's very 90s, isn't it?
But it does feel, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He sort of kept the 90s thing going. Everything about Banksy is very 90s. It's very Bristol scene. For some reason, like, you know, like the Bristol music and stuff of the 90s.
Hmm.
It's sort of got that vibe to it. But I think maybe it's because he hasn't...
Your massive attacks and the like.
Massive attack, all that stuff. Cool Bristol. Mm-hmm. When Bristol, between the two great ages of just infinite pasties, there was a brief window where Bristol was incredibly cool. Just pasties. Cool as heck. Pasties, isn't it? Is that fair?
So you're saying that era is over of coolness now? It's just
the
back
era,
to pasties.
I think the era of coolness is over, probably, but it's back to pasties.
Yeah.
It was very, very cool. I briefly had a zoo.
Yeah.
And then went back to pasties. Quite a lot of the zoo probably ended up in the pasties, actually. I think the two industries were probably...
Coexisting, yeah.
Symbiotic, weren't they?
Yeah.
But I think Banksy's managed to keep it going, partly because he hasn't... We've never seen him. And what Banksy will now look like, I think there's no question, because of, you know, times past, he's now a middle-aged man, he will now wear a tank top, a woolen tank top, have a sort of red corduroy tie.
Waterproof gilet.
He'll have a waterproof gilet on top of the tank top, so he's completely neglecting his arms altogether. He's got two layers of armless clothing.
Yeah, very long gloves though. They go up past the elbow.
Very, very, very long gloves, which were worn by sort of Gilded Age American heiress to the opera, which he bought for a lot of money.
Yeah,
that's what he's mainly spent his money on, because he'll have an obscure historical interest, won't he, like all middle-aged men?
Yeah, flapper girls, in his case. Yeah,
it'll be flapper girls and their gloves. Specifically their gloves. Which he actually lectures on in universities. Doesn't he? Under the name of Dr. Norris Pimpington. Which is actually his real name.
Yeah. But there's never a photo attached.
Well, there's only ever a photo of a rat holding some balloons and a machine gun. That's the photo of him that he puts on all his books.
And then trousers-wise, it's brown cords with integrated round hemorrhoid cushion.
That's right. So, and it's a paisley hemorrhoid cushion.
Anti-DVT stockings.
Anti-DVD.
Yeah, both. Yeah, one leg is anti-DVT, the other one is anti-DVT. Yeah. Because one leg he's worried about getting clots, the other one is still fighting on that Blu-ray.
Yes.
Blu-ray battle.
He's so pro Blu-ray, isn't he?
He thinks DVDs are going to ruin television. He thinks that TV reached its height with the second series of Alvida Saint Pet. Doesn't he? He puts a lot of money into trying to bring back Alvida Saint Pet, doesn't he? He's hired Julian Fellowes to write a new Alvida Saint Pet.
But Jimmy Nail says no.
But I think there may be some truth in that.
In what? He's got a collection of 1920s flappers gloves, which he wears with his gilet and trousers with integrated hemorrhoid pillow.
He's one of the only people in the world to own a pair of quadruple tweeded shorts. So he's got shorts that have four different tweeds. So from left to right, it starts with one tweed, and by the time you get to the other side of the shorts, it's a fourth tweed. It's gone through. That means he's had to enlist four different great tweed families to work together. Yeah.
And he's had to battle four Scottish clans in order to win the tweed.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of bad blood between the tweed artisans.
A lot of bad, huge, huge, awful blood. Some of the worst blood in the world between those Scottish tweed families. No, the point I'm making is, I think that he's managed to keep his cool mystique by never revealing his face. It's the same trick that Daft Punk pulled.
And Darth Vader.
And Darth...
Till the very end.
No, but I think Banksy has kept some of his mystique, hasn't he?
Well, he's kept all of his mystique. No one knows who he is.
Yeah, because we can't see his ruddy cheeks,
his thriving nostril hairs,
his hugely thriving nostril hairs,
his Crocs,
his comb over,
his calloused heels and his verrucas,
his subscription to the Spectator.
Are there people in your local area, Mike, who assume that you're Banksy because of your dog turd pyramid?
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, and I don't want to disabuse them of that because it adds to my own mystique, you see.
Yeah. You've got a pretty big mystique, I'd say.
I mean, you have got it would be perfect, wouldn't it? Because you are, I would say in the whole of Britain, you are the person that I would least suspect of being Banksy. Isn't it? Which would actually be the perfect disguise because you are the anti-Banksy, aren't you? Mm-hmm.
Fiercely anti-art.
What you would want a stencil of on a wall in East London would be a policeman with the head of a policeman, the gun of a policeman, and two backup policemen behind him. Yeah. And standing next to the car of a policeman, a police car.
Arresting a little girl who has done a crime.
Ideally all photorealistic, please.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, actually, you know what? Turn them into real policemen because we need more of them on the streets. And that's what I call art. Isn't it? You would actually just get more policemen out there. And you know what you'd have a special squad to remove vandalistic art from walls, wouldn't you? You'd have people taking down Banksy's.
Yeah, I mean, there's only one type of paint I get behind, and that's anti-climb paint, frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you'll have anti-climb paint on anything.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Even if it's not a climb, hotspot.
I've got it on the backs of my shoulders just in case.
Haven't you?
Time to turn on the Beam Machine.
Yes, please.
And we're going to use a version of the Beam Machine jingle sent in by a listener. This is from David.
Ooh. Thanks, David.
He says, "It is with great regret that I write to inform you of a recent occurrence. The other day I was exploring the old smuggler's caves, and I happened upon a chasm previously unknown to me. Throwing caution to the wind, I descended. As I plunged deeper and deeper into the darkness, I started to hear sounds, echoed and distorted yet eerily familiar. Was that Ben Partridge introducing a jingle? Henry Packer screaming? Mike Wozniak chuckling? Could it be? I have endeavoured to recreate the horror that I experienced. Please find attached."
Mysterious.
Mysterious indeed. Quite 90s Bristol, that, wasn't it?
Very, very Banksy.
Very Banksy, wasn't it?
It's a really Banksy-themed episode.
Weirdly, I recently spanned through. We've got quite a lot of a backlog of jingles to play, which is nice. Mm. I've slightly forgotten which ones we've already played, which is, I'm in a bit of a muddle.
Right. Yeah.
Admin-wise.
Yeah.
There's a lot of jungle versions of our theme tunes, of our jingles.
Mm. Was that a jungle, what we were just listening to?
There was
to
a jungly feeling, was there? Right. I don't know.
Yeah. Goldie.
Yeah.
It's all quite 90s, isn't it?
Yeah. Which I think maybe puts a good age on our listener, on our average listener.
Yeah, it might do.
The jungle enthusiast. What we've got is a lot of versions of the Pompidou theme, but we don't tend to do that many Pompidous.
Oh, we don't, do we?
I think what it was when we started the podcast, we did a lot of deciding kind of what the podcast would be like, but now we know what it's like. It's this.
Is it?
Sorry, but it's this.
Sorry, but it's this.
There is no more Pompidouing. There is no more progress. We've stopped analysing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, you're right. It's a post Pompidou thing now, isn't it? And this is.
We've atrophied into this kind of. Yeah.
These are our best tubes, isn't it? These are the tubes we've got. These tubes aren't going to change.
Yeah. So I hope we will still have cause to talk about, you know, something in a Pompidou sense, and we can use up these jingles, but yeah. I mean, I guess you could say, couldn't you, that the fact that we're talking about whether the podcast as a format has crystallized and whether it will change.
Wait a minute. We've only gone and done it again. There's always another tube within the tube. You're right. The tubes do keep evolving. They're wet tubes. That's what we are. It's more like, it's less like the Pompidou Center. It's more like the internal organs of an animal, isn't it? It's wet tubes. It's still piping. It's still a form of, it's still irrigation. It's still, isn't it? It's still a pipe network.
I'm so confused as to what you're talking about.
But it's wet. We're wet piping. We're flexible. We're flexible tubes.
I think we've got. Four or five hot analogies on the go at them.
Currently, you know what? It's a bit like spaghetti. The tubes is like spaghetti. It's all mixed up, isn't it? Metaphorically.
Anyway, I would say the fact that we're talking about this does make this a Pompidou, and so we can play a Pompidou jingle if we so wish.
Brilliant,
please.
And will it be a version of one?
Yeah, this is from Oscar.
Yeah,
got another version.
Hello, Beans. Yeah. I've done an extra jungly version of the Pompidou jingle.
More jungle.
Thank you, Oscar.
Here we go.
And here is our brand spanking new jungle style. And now it's time for Pompidou section.
You know what? That's really brought back the 90s. That was, I think, that an emotion I felt a lot in the 90s. It was just incredibly uneasy. It was very uneasy music, wasn't it? Why was it so uneasy and dark? Because
it's slightly sinister sounding, isn't it?
Because this is the music that your parents wanted you to be afraid of.
I think so, yeah.
This was the music that would lead you to raves, the music of the street drugs.
Well, that's the thing, because it's the jungle rhythm. It's incredibly sort of like...
Do you feel like committing an act of civil unrest after this?
It makes you, yeah. Hmm. It couldn't... Look, I don't want to sound like an old bore, but it couldn't be further from a Viennese waltz. Could it?
I don't know. I think if you sped up a Viennese waltz, you could make it sound like
that. But it's just very uneasy. And then, obviously, in the 90s, everyone was doing drugs, and that sort of made people feel uneasy. And people getting together in warehouses, that's it's a bit uneasy.
Wearing Global Technicolor T-shirts.
Yeah, and sort of glowing...
Hypercolor, whatever they
were
called.
Wearing, like, neon sunglasses and stuff.
Yeah.
IKEA had just arrived in Britain. Very uneasy time.
Very uneasy.
Suddenly we have to do flatback? What?
Yeah,
a desk lamp for £1.50. That's an uneasy price. It's too. I now want to buy 500 desk lamps. Why am I suddenly buying 500 desk lamps?
Yeah.
Why am I getting excited about the meatballs? There's nothing. They're just really, really small meatballs. Why am I getting so excited about the meatballs that I'll still be talking about them on a podcast in 25 years' time?
There's a great thing on Twitter this week where someone on Twitter complained to IKEA that they'd gone to an IKEA branch, eaten the meatballs, and then minutes later, as they walked around the store, shat themselves. And they'd done this big complaint. And then a number of sort of doctors piped up underneath and said, it's very unlikely that the meatballs would make you shit immediately. So that was... Yeah.
Ben, I've been beating this drum for years and no one listens to me. You're shunting out a previous meal's poo. You're not pooing the meal you've just eaten. It's barges. It's the Grand Union Canal system and it's barges. You're shunting out a previous barge. And yet the meal you've just eaten gets the blame. Whereas actually, It's not necessarily the booner you've just had.
It was the trio of Scotch eggs you had in the afternoon.
That you found in the boot of your car.
Yeah, and it's probably the first of those Scotch eggs which is shunting the other two along.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So you've got to backdate these things. Don't start throwing blame around.
Well, that's what these medical professionals were saying. They were saying that shitting yourself was already in the post.
Already in the post.
Yeah. It was written.
So all you've done is alerted the world to the fact you shat yourself in an IKEA.
Yeah.
Did he back down? Or did he dig his heels in? We live in a time where people dig their heels in more and more, I feel.
Yeah.
I think it's going to run and run, that one. And if it has run and run, that also won't be the responsibility of the meatballs.
Very tidy.
Something you had the night before. Nicely done. By the way, I've got a possible exception to that rule, which is the time when I ate some chicken nuggets with a hot, spicy and brand new Korean dunking sauce.
Henry, it was the Scotch eggs you'd found in the boot of your car. They'd been there for weeks.
It was the three Scotch eggs again, wasn't it? I'd assuming for months that they were just three smelly old tennis balls in the back, the car rattling around in the back.
I mean, this conversation, though disgusting, helps me get through the backlog.
Is there a digestive tract?
This is from James. Hello, Beans. Please find attach my rendition of the digestive tract talk jingle, in which you can hear me having multi-tracked myself playing the cello.
Digestive tract talk.
Very nice.
Was that him doing the digestive tract talk or me?
Him, so, I think.
Was it him doing me?
Pitch perfect impression.
Yeah.
Wow. I think it's the first time I've ever had someone do an impression of me. It did it quite well. Has Bluebell ever eaten a Scotch egg, I wonder?
Ho ho!
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you remember Samuel?
Remind me.
Is he, no, who's Samuel?
From La France.
Oh, yeah.
Which one's he?
Yeah.
He's a fantastic man who did a very good French version of the Flightless Bird theme tune.
Oh, yeah.
Which was one of my favourites we've
Samuel?
Ever done. Anyway, Samuel says, here is a new French version of one of your jingles, Bluebell. I don't have much to say on this one, apart from one interesting fact. The sentence, she's a cat, in French, c'est une chatte.
Does that sound rude in French or something?
Can both mean she's a cat and she's a...
Yes. Which is actually, because people used to think I was saying that, didn't they?
Well, it's me singing that bit, yeah.
Come off it. That was...
Also in English as well.
That was you singing that bit, wasn't it?
Anyway, here we go. Cloche bleue, cloche bleue. Douce et gentil et sage et gentil. Cloche bleue, cloche bleue. Robuste et cuisse soyeuse, cloche bleue, c'est une chatte. Voilà qui vole comme une étoile à poil, classique et chic comme une voiture rétro. Tu iras très haut, cloche bleue, cloche bleue. Emmène-moi dans ton voyage magique. Cloche bleue, vers la voie lactée dans ton vaisseau férique. Cloche bleue, c'est du chat. Je te donnerai des biscuits sur la lune. Trois crânes verts géants, comme dans Dune. Je t'y retrouverai. Absolutely incredible.
That's superb, I mean, isn't it? That's one of my faves.
Yeah.
It's better than the original, with the greatest of respect.
Yes, absolutely. It's fantastic.
That's brilliant. You know, by the way, we all saw we've all seen the film Dune 2 recently.
Yeah.
We did.
Which we talked about in a Patreon-only Film Corner episode.
But I had another thought about Dune 2, something that's reminded me of, which is there's a lot of talk of bloodlines in Dune 2. There's a lot of stuff about sort of who's got the right blood, sacred blood. Blood can sort of listen and sort of speak, and because it's very much a kind of, it's got a sort of, it's that kind of aristocratic
ducal families,
ducal mythologies of like, and the one with the right blood will be king, and all the core values of Three Bean Salad, isn't it?
Right. Yeah.
And but it reminded me of when we bought Bluebell, which I don't think I've ever talked about. Bluebell was purchased. It's quite a weird concept, but...
Is she a Tsarina?
Well, she's certainly British. She's a British shorthair, so they're all British aristocracy.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, they're...
But those guys all have a bit of Russian or German.
They've all got a bit of Russian
and
German.
I'm sure there's a bit of Tsarina.
A bit of Tsarina in there. There's some Kaiser.
Deutsch. Yeah, there's, yeah. Kaiserina. Yeah.
Her four cats would have been... They would have been deeply embroiled in World War One in a very complicated way.
Very, very complicated way.
Cousins firing at cousins.
Yes, very, very hard time for the short hairs because which side were you on? You could end up, you know, bayoneting an uncle, whatever. But of course, they trace their heritage back to the Roman Empire, short hairs. That's actually true.
Do they?
Yeah.
Nonsense.
I think they're Roman cats.
Bollocks.
But imagine a Roman centurion's helmet. Picture it.
Yeah.
Now picture a British short hair's face.
Yeah. What, instead of the Roman's face?
You weren't supposed to be picturing a Roman's face. You're just supposed to be picturing the helmet.
But what am I replacing on the helmet with the face of the cat? The brush bit?
Is it a whisker?
No. You're supposed to be descending
There's a cat hiding in it.
No, you're supposed to be lowering the helmet onto the British short hair's head.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
Oh my God, it fits.
It fits perfectly. And I couldn't have faked that.
It's not that there's a cat sleeping in a centurion's helmet drawer because it's cozy.
That's a very cute image as well. Feel free to picture that.
Thank you.
Well, they've got the wide, chunky face, sort of militaristic. The eyes are far enough apart that you can get a nose shield down the middle.
Mm-hmm. So they could wear like a Norman helmet.
They could wear a Norman helmet. They could wear any of the great helmets. I mean, I think they're in the Bear Tapestry. There's definitely some short hairs knocking around in there. But basically, we bought her from a place in Kent, for a town in Kent. And I don't know, Mike, what the story is with Pam when you bought Pam. But we bought Bluebell from quite an eccentric. You know, you picture an eccentric person whose job is selling cats.
Were they wearing a toga and they said, "My name is Cambrinius. Come through."
Help yourself to a goblet of wine and come in. Yes, and I'm sorry, we only eat grapes lying down here. Just a little house rule. So if you're going to eat any grapes, lie down.
So you first met Bluebell, she's draped across a chaise longue.
Yeah. The woman we bought her off, the cat dealer, that's what I call them, cat dealers, was ex-military.
From the Legion.
Exactly.
Fighting in Gaul.
She was ex-military, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She took us, so we went into the back of a very normal looking one up, two down, two up, three, yeah, whatever that phrase is.
Yeah.
A frame, one up, two down. Just a sort of standard suburban house in this little town in
because you're sort of describing a pyramid by the sounds of it.
Just a standard.
So she's a retired legionnaire who's a member of the Illuminati. Okay. Probably quite senior if she's got one of those, if it's detached so as well.
Yeah.
She's got a detached pyramid.
A semi-detached pyramid.
Okay.
But so it all looked like a normal house. And we go through the front door. Then she took us into the back. And the way I remember it is the back garden was a kind of military training camp for like short hairs. So there were these cages of short hairs and they were running up and down little ramps. They were sort of doing exercises. I don't know. It felt like walking into a kind of Rambo or maybe like a sort of Viet Cong camp or something. I don't know. It was like wooden cages and there were big males. The males are very big, prowling, proud. I mean,
bit of target practice, bit of hand-to-hand combat happening in one corner.
Yeah,
somewhere.
It was hand-to-hand combat. No, that's what, you know. It was like in Planet of the Apes, the first one. Where Charlton Heston gets caught and they get taken through the kind of the ape world. And so they're all fighting this kind of militaristic society. By the way, the males, I mean, just getting a sense of how intimidating they are. These males are prowling around in special cages. And these males can grow up to almost a foot tall. So we're talking seriously intimidating.
Sort of like the size of a cat, really.
Fully grown cat.
Big cat.
They put it this way, two of these cats, one standing in front of the other, that would be the length of two cats nose to tail.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean in place in bus terms, we're talking like probably like a 50th of a bus high. Each one of them.
Can I ask, Henry, when you went out into the sort of cat breeding / training paddock?
Yeah. Exactly what it was like, yeah.
The wall of cat piss smell you must have hit when you walked out there, right?
It's intimidating. Yeah. It's intimidating.
So many pheromones flying around.
So many pheromones. And there's different types of piss. There's territorial piss. There's the sexual piss. There's just small. Some of the piss is just small talk. It's just how are you piss. But it's
memo piss.
There's memo piss. Maybe there's like goss piss. There'll be some hot goss that's gone around.
And gospel piss as
gospel
well.
Gospel piss. There's all kinds. So many different levels. And obviously, a cat's nose can differentiate them all. And it's very sophisticated.
Yeah. You're not able to counteract that, are you? Just, you know, what, you know. No, man.
I did my best, but at the end of the day, I was just one man taking a piss in a Kent garden. it was never going to work.
But did you start? I imagine like the pheromone hit you must have got.
Yeah,
you start thinking, you're right. I am inferior to this male cat.
Yeah, no, exactly. I will.
Splay your external genitalia submissively.
I will splay my external genitalia to the extent that I can. That's a man who's just done a piss, who's then taking his trousers off and lying down in a Kent garden. But, you know, it was the best I could do. Yeah, so it's an extremely intimidating atmosphere. I can't emphasize enough the size of these male British shorthairs. Imagine a rhino keyring, and it's about 25 times bigger. But
it's not on a chain, it's loose.
It's not on a chain, mate. You wish. You wish it was chained up.
Choose your fighter.
And then it's a question of, you know, I had to fight the biggest short hair there, obviously, to earn the right to...
To take Bluebell as your bride.
Yeah. But she said a few... She was into the bloodlines. It was all about bloodlines. That's why it reminded me of June.
Hmm.
Way cuter than the worms, by the way. Like, not even close.
But surely, I imagine Bluebell has been infested with worms at some point.
Actually, not really, because Bluebell lives exclusively indoors. And basically, like Michael Jackson during his bubble phase. not bubble. No, Bubbles is his... Well, he lived in a bubble.
Bubble was the name of his chimp, wasn't it?
Bubble was the name of his chimp. But didn't he live in a bubble for a bit?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where Bluebell exists. So she's never really come across of...
She's a cosseted princess.
She's a cosseted princess.
Oh, yeah.
And that's sort of how the short hair kingdom is divided. Is you've got cosseted princesses and you've got bull-faced warriors.
Yeah.
Who sort of exist to protect them. But you sense that the cosseted princesses, the female short hairs, are a bit like the weirding women, the witches in Dune, that they sort of...
They're pulling the strings.
And they can see into the future and stuff.
And they can see into the future.
Yeah. Get you to pass on a glass. With magic.
Buy me the posher biscuits.
People will sometimes say that.
Buy me the posher meat biscuits, which have a combination of lamb and chicken. Give me the duck this week. I want the duck. I haven't had duck for ages.
But the point this story is getting to is that two things happen. So basically, when we were buying Bluebell, this thing happened, which is this woman, she was ex-military. She was basically running a kind of illegal mercenary British short hair army, as far as we could tell.
It's a militia, feline militia.
A feline militia. Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of it's described as, you know, yes, they're off to do some security work.
Yeah, okay. You know,
protecting a gold mine in Nigeria or whatever. Yeah. But we know that they're organising a coup. It's going to be a short hair-based coup. Basically, I don't know, Mike, what happened when you bought Pam? You can tell us in a sec. But there was a sense that we've got to please this woman or she won't let us buy Bluebell. Because we'd seen Bluebell as a kitten. It's the cutest thing ever. But we had to kind of go through these, we had to jump through a series of hoops, essentially, in terms of like saying the right thing, letting her give us the tour of the bits where the short hairs are attacking the sort of effigies of people, tearing them to shreds. And we had to kind of keep her happy. She kept us very much like, it wasn't clear, are we gonna get to get Bluebell or not? It wasn't just like buying a kettle, nor should it be. But still, there was a sense that...
I think it should be more that buying a kettle should be more like buying Bluebell.
I think you're right.
I think in John Lewis, they should, you know, keep on a leash a bit.
Yeah.
See if you're right for this
kettle. Take proper care of this kettle. You're going to scale it regularly.
Yeah.
We were pre-checked, so it was all business when we...
It
was in South Wales we got Pam from, in Cowbridge.
Okay.
So it was very much pre-checked beforehand that we were the right sort.
How did they do that?
By some former MI6 people?
Former MI6, mostly... And a little bit of NSA, that kind of stuff. And it's all about, is anyone about? All that kind of stuff. Are you actually going to be able to look after this?
Are you going to be there?
they'll ask quite searching questions about your schedule and your work and all that kind of stuff. Which, again, I've got plenty of time for. That's fine. Because we were in lockdown as well, so there are lots of people who bought dogs and then like, oh, shit, we've got to go back into the office. I can't keep a dog.
Right.
So that was all done ahead of time. So when we got there, he was very much all business. And we saw Pam's father first, who was, I would say, roughly the size of four Hyundai i10s. And we panicked.
Really?
But he was enormous, to the point where we thought we'd made an enormous mistake.
Oh, really?
There's no way we can look after this dog. And then out trotted Pam's mother and tiny Pam. And we're like, we're okay.
We can be fine.
So for you, Henry, it was more like, is this person worthy of the bloodline?
Yeah. There was no power play thing going on between us and the breeder.
No, there was all kinds of power play. And there was also things like, will he be okay if Bluebell has to disappear for 6 months? To
go to the Royal Congress,
for example. Yeah, will you be okay to transport Bluebell to Vienna for ball season once a year?
And can you make sure that she keeps her Spanish up, because regime change season is coming up in about 6 months, and she will need to go to Latin America.
The Duke of Cordoba is in heat.
And of course, all the different waltzes and stuff that the Bluebell has to be able to do at these events. Otherwise, you know, it'll bring shame on her own bloodline if she can't. Yeah. So you have to be able to teach her to waltz, but also she has to be very good at. She has to be trained, highly trained in port-a-paw combat.
Port-a-paw combat is when you're carrying two other creatures that are having a fight.
That's right.
Is it?
Yeah. She was very. So there were two things. There were two things she asked, and I made a mistake on both of them, because we were trying to just. It was this like sort of minefield of answering the right questions right so that she'll let us have Bluebell. One of them was, do you think you'll ever intend to show her? Do you know what that means?
What, take her to a cat show? Right.
So take her to cat shows.
All right.
And for some reason, I made a really bad mistake in terms of...
Well, what's the right answer?
Exactly. It was a difficult one. It was like these sort of riddles and things. Like, what's the right thing to say? And I went, maybe. It turned out it was a mistake. I should have said no. But because I said maybe, it launched her into a huge chunk of extra sort of admin and details, and I think she wasn't keen for us to show her. If we did show her, it had to be under certain segments. Of course, we were never going to show Bluebell. I wasn't going to suddenly become someone that wants to parade a cat around cat shows. But I thought if I said no, that she might be offended or something. And that is a bit like marrying a czarina, isn't it? It is quite similar. Are you going to take her to the great balls of Europe? Whatever.
Maybe.
So, and then the other thing was to do with getting Bluebell's, getting a spade. Is it spade? Is that the
spade?
Term?
Yeah.
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 So that was very important.
And again, was it are you going to get her spade? And you didn't know what the answer was.
Well, I went for, well, half. But I think I prevaricated around spade as well, because I wasn't sure what she wanted us to say.
Yeah. She wanted the bloodline to end. She wanted to be in control of the bloodline.
Yeah.
And oh, is that it?
And I'm not joking. This is word for word. She said this phrase that's never left me and never will to the day I die. She said, when I die, my bloodlines die with me. Can you imagine?
Wow.
You don't get that when you buy a kettle. When I die, my bloodlines die with me.
When Morphy Richards dies. that's bananas.
It absolutely is banana souffle, isn't it?
Also because it makes it sound as if she has a plan for that to be insured, should she die unexpectedly.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's rigged in some way. Graham down the road has the code.
He has the code.
Yeah. Or if she doesn't... Yeah. If she doesn't punch in the code once every 24 hours at a certain time.
Then all the short hairs are instructed to kill their owners. And they have a... And ironically, she shows you... She tours you around where they're being trained to do just that. And as soon as she's dying...
They kill their owners before turning the claws on themselves.
Claws on themselves. Yeah. They've all got a little brain, little implant thing.
Yeah, it's kind of Manchurian Candidate thing. They can be activated. It's
Manchurian Candidate thing.
Got a cyanide tipped tail or anus that they can bite into.
And of course, probably no coincidence that Bluebell has had anal gland issues, which means, you know,
it's the capsule.
That's the that'll be the capsule
causing a bit of inflammation.
And if that doesn't work, they're also trained to use, or even the most sparsely populated utensils draw. They can kill you. They can kill you with a cheese grater. They can kill you with most types of garlic crusher.
Mm-hmm. You just have to hope you don't get the whisk.
You just hope you don't get the bloody whisk.
Because they'll do it. It'll just take a while.
Because they'll do it. They will meringue you.
And they know when they're done, when they can lift the bowl up above their head and no bits of you flop out.
You're just a creamy dead peak.
And actually, a short hair standing next to a creamy dead peak looks absolutely lovely on Instagram. And we'll actually get a lot of hits.
Wow. When I die, the bloodline. So
when I die, my bloodlines die with me. And you get a certificate. I don't know if it's the same with when you got Pam, but you get a certificate, which is like looking at the family tree of the Habsburgs.
Oh, really?
You get this. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It goes back generations.
Proper provenance type.
Yeah, yeah. You get all the provenance. So, yeah. And it's basically sort of guaranteeing the maximum amount of inbreeding possible, isn't it? That's
going back to the first cat. The cat that killed the serpent in the Garden of Eden.
Now, chaps, can I can I raise a true Pompidou?
Mm, please.
Pompidou it, mate.
And why don't we use a Pompidou jingle that someone sent in?
Yes, please.
This is from Micah Bell from Canada.
Why is it called Pompidou?
Because at the Pompidou Centre, you can see.
The tubes, you can see the escalators from underneath.
Again, very 90s Bristol, I think.
Yeah, long fade out. Very 90s, long fade out. Enjoyed that, though.
Yeah.
Right.
Micah also writes, if you read this out on the show, please pass on the message to my wife that I think she is cute.
But he's not sure.
I thought that was sweet.
Oh, that's very lovely.
He sent it in 8 months ago, so anything could have happened since then. So my Pompidou is, we fucked it, right?
We've totally fucked it.
Yeah.
This is the final episode of Three Bean Salad. Apologies, everyone. There was always a risk this would happen. It's our iceberg, isn't it? We've hit it.
But there is no banter concealed underneath.
There is no banter concealed underneath.
What you see is what you get.
The whole project was hubristic, let's face it.
So basically, we haven't yet got onto the topic from the Bean Machine. I don't think we've got time to do that. So
no.
What do we call this episode?
So I've got a suggestion.
Yeah.
Which is that we retroactively make the topic Bluebell or something, or just
one pull the wool over the eyes of the listener.
Exactly. I'm talking about corruption, the sweet smell of moral decay. And you know the way a mango is, when it's gone off, it's really nice.
yeah
like that.
That's but it, if it goes off too much, it's no longer really nice.
It's really horrific. Yeah. So
thin end of the wedge, though, isn't
thin
it?
Thin end of the
where
wedge.
Where does this end? It's cards on the table time, isn't it? Really, with the this has happened before. There is a precedent for this. Yeah, we can just call it accidental bluebell episode.
Yeah,
but should we put something in about? Yeah, no, will we just keep this bit in where we've had this conversation to explain it?
It's a Pompidou. It's an old fashioned Pompidou.
It's a Pompidou. The whole episode's a Pompidou. We could always call the episode Pompidou or Bluebell or both. Bluebidou.
Cloche bleu. Cloche bleu in honour of the brilliant French jingle.
We call it Cloche bleu.
Cloche bleu. Okay, now time to read your emails. We'll play a version of our email jingle sent in by Gentori.
Thank you, Gentori.
He sent quite a confusing email. He writes, I'm now running a covert guerrilla jingle operation from deep within the dense foliage of Mike's dense moustaches.
Okay.
Oh, that's what it's been, Mike.
I knew something was going on.
You were saying there was a lot of noise coming out of it.
I was putting a lot of flea powder down, but it wasn't working.
Wasn't doing it.
No surprise now, is there?
And you gave it a vinegar rinse, didn't you?
I did, yeah. It's not going to shift a jinglist, is it?
Anyway, here we go.
Try to Games. When you send email, you would give rights to the banking process.
Morning.
We're really getting through the jungle jingle backlog. Oh, my God.
It's so jungle all the way, isn't it?
Very 90s vibes all the way around.
So disturbing. I mean, very, very good. Very well put together.
Beginning of that, I was like a 90s cinema vibes. I was with the sort of radio going through the channels. And
yeah. It was very... It reminded me of this... Was it Aphex Twin or Prodigy? The videos were incredibly disturbing a lot of the time.
Aphex Twin particularly, yeah.
Those music videos were like deeply, deeply distressing. Why was that happening in the 90s? Was it because politically things were quite stable?
Relatively? Yeah, everything was going well. Clinton was in the White House. The Cold War was over.
History was over, some people thought.
Yeah.
And the world was at peace, if you forget about Yugoslavia. And lots of other places.
Yeah. Quite a few other places.
Yeah. But I think Oasis visiting Downing Street was seen, wasn't it, certainly by Francis Fukuyama, as the end of history. Because once the Gallagher brothers are eating your little salmon rolls and stuff.
Even the Gallagher, yeah, they're hovering around the political centrist parties of the day.
Yeah. But once you've got a Gallagher brother going... You know, tell you what, you say what you like about Tony Blair. There's a nice bit of dill on this little salmon little... it's a nice little bit of dill on this spleen, isn't it?
I'll just have the box fizz because I'm driving later. Thanks, so.
That's the end of history, isn't it? Once that's happened.
Yeah. Let's listen to Jungle.
No, but like, whereas now that everything's terrible...
Yeah. We need smooth, gentle, haunting ballads.
The music is all ukulele... I like your face, you like my face. Everyone's got a face and a nice face too. Isn't it? Is that music now? But it's all...
I don't know what music is like now. How would you characterise music these days?
I don't know what music is like now.
There's a lot of singer-songwriters, soloists, on the just kind of singing love ballads and... It's all very melodic and pleasant and...
Yeah, is it all quite melodic and nice? Is that what it is?
Unless that's just what I'm getting fired at me.
You have two teenage daughters, so there's probably fairly skewed.
I'm not getting hit with sort of deeply challenging stuff with rhythms that will trigger an IBS attack or anything like that. It's all quite palatable.
It's ironic that the people who created that music are now of an age where listening to it is very, very likely to trigger a whole series of health problems, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. We do live in a strange world, because the other day, or last year, I was listening to Radio 2, and it was like drive time Radio 2, so it was all very, you know, cheerful and whatever.
Yeah.
And a granny rang in. Oh, hello, thank you. I'm pleased to be on the radio. And they said, what's your request? And she went, Firestarter by the Prodigy.
It was a simpler time. You know, you could buy ecstasy tablets for 15 quid and good ones. You know what I mean? It wasn't the same.
Yeah, I met my husband in a mosh pit.
Yeah.
we beat the living shit out of a 15-year-old from Scunthorpe together, and we've just been together ever since.
You knew where you stood. You could buy a pair of cargo pants. For what? £25. You had enough pockets for your ecstasy. You had your ecstasy pocket. You had your acid tabs pocket.
Your spare DMs in your pockets.
Not right now.
You can't get global hypercolor now, can you? That's the problem these days.
I remember being on a dance floor in the 90s with a person who I thought I knew, who was a good friend, fairly sort of normal bloke. And I looked at him. I thought, something's different about him. What is it? Oh yeah. He's wearing an adapted welding mask. with two torches stuck to it. That sort of firing light out of his head. Bloody weird.
Yeah.
But a great time for the whistle oligarchs. My word, those guys made a fortune.
Yeah. It's true.
Whereas now they just have to rely on referees.
It's not enough.
And leisure centres.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gentori, for that. Now, let's read some emails. It's time for a bollocking. It's listener bollocking of the week.
Accessing listener bollocking. Bollocking loading. Bollocking loaded.
This is from Josh from Dartmouth, Nova Scotia.
Which is towards the southeast of Canada.
Correct.
I know that because I've worked it into my memory image. I call it a mnemonic, but I think that's not right, is it? Because that's a word. That's
yes.
The words. I actually can't remember what mnemonic means, ironically.
But, I thought it was just any memory aid, but maybe that's wrong.
Maybe it is a mnemonic. But so just to recap that it's still working, little mnemonic recap. I was going to say Terry Butcher. He's got nothing to do with it. Why has he come into my head? Hugh Bonneville is eating a Bourneville chocolate. It is being hacked away at by Gene Hackman, whose trousers are down. His bottom is being branded by Kenneth Branagh. On his back is a map of Canada. Towards the bottom right is the territory of Nova Scotia. And I've added one privately, by the way, in the last week to help me out.
Okay.
Kenneth Branagh's left toe is stuck into a pot of Coleman's mustard being held by the actress Olivia Colman. Because whenever I can't remember something now, and I've got these serial things that I can't remember, I add them to my memory picture. And you're free. Feel free to make one of your own.
Well, let's move on to another email. We'll come back to Josh. This is from Eleanor. She writes, I've got new mnemonic for Henry.
Ah, cool.
Oh, great.
Right, so she writes, Dear Beans, my friend's boyfriend lives in Maidenhead. And I thought that was a long way away. But it turns out I was thinking of Maidstone.
Ah.
I've created a mnemonic to remember which is which.
Okay.
Maidenhead is Kent. Maidstone is close to home. Hang on,
it depends where you live. So, I mean, it's obviously, it works for her, I guess.
I've not finished it. She says, Maidenhead is in Kent. Maidstone is close to home. And it's the other way around.
That's the nightmare, is when you have to have it's the other way around worked into a mnemonic. That's why I still to this day, and not till the day I die, know how to spell February. Because I know, and we've talked about this before.
I think that's why she thinks it might appeal to you.
Yeah, perhaps. Because I know that it's about the R, but which way round it is about the R, I will never know. Because it's impossible to remember once you've opened up the possibility that it's one or the other. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
But I now have no confidence which is in Kent.
No. And that's when mnemonics go wrong, it's very, very dangerous. Because you can create a full permanent memory lacuna system whereby you'll never be able to remember something.
So, it's like a misinformation bomb, isn't it?
And so it's always a risk when you've got it worked into your memory aid that it's the opposite. Try to not have that.
Yeah.
Try to not have it worked in that it's the opposite.
I think it's very important that we maintain the integrity of your Branagh, etc. mnemonic. Yeah. And I think we have to reject whatever Eleanor's tried to get involved with.
Because it would be like me having in my mnemonic that Hugh Bonneville is eating a Dairy Milk, but which is the opposite of a Bourneville in a way.
Careful, Henry.
You've got to be careful.
You've got to be careful. It doesn't work.
I would invite the listener to send in, if they want to augment the mnemonic, I think they can, but they need to be very careful.
But it has to be things which I can't remember. They can't be sticking things that they can't remember into my mnemonic, can they?
Because, of course, Henry, you can remember where Maidstone is.
Well, I know it's closer than Maidenhead or the other way around. Oh, no.
Anyway, back to Josh's email, which is Listener Bollocking of the Week.
Yeah.
Yes.
He says, Hello Beans, long-time listener from Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. He'd like to shout out Russell Zwicker for introducing him to the podcast.
Russell Zwicker, who was recently in the Bean Lounge, I believe.
Nice. Ben basically said that Nova Scotia is known for crab fishermen.
Or crab-crabberman.
Crab-crabberman.
Yeah.
It is actually most well known for lobster fishermen.
That's embarrassing.
That is embarrassing, Ben.
But what is a lobster? if not
an imperial crab.
An imperial and elongated crab. It's all the same thing, isn't it?
That's so naive. Lobsters move on the x-axis, don't they? And crabs on the y-axis, whatever. Lobsters are front and back, aren't they? Crabs are side to side. That's one difference.
So they can never look each other in the face.
They can never look each other in the face. It's a bit like chess, isn't it? They've got their set moves.
Yeah, if you get a bishop lobster, they can go diagonally.
They can go diagonally, yeah. But it's very, very hard to ordain a lobster. Because it's very hard to get them to turn up to the ceremony. Because they dry out fast. Well, we know they dry out fast because that's why they're so expensive. They're hard to transport. A bloke said that on the internet once.
Yeah. So, Josh, I think that's bollocking accepted. That's fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bollocking accepted.
And he did say, keep up the good work and sorry for the bollocking. So he's doing it, he's reluctantly bollocking, which I think is the right way to do it.
Yeah. And just in terms of when the crustaceans rise up, it is lobsters are the admiralty, crabs are your sort of cavalry, and then prawns are the infantry. It's wave after wave of prawns at the front, isn't it? They just get...
And you mean that literally? The crabs will be on horseback, they're saying.
I mean that completely literally. They'll be on sea horseback. Which is quite a sight. If you've ever seen a crab riding a seahorse, it is intimidating.
Carrying a lance. Yeah.
Yeah. It's quite something.
We've had an email from Chris from near Diamond Harbour.
Ooh.
Play the jingle.
Play the song.
Diamonds in their eyes and diamonds in the sea. Come with us and meet the families of Diamond Harbour.
It's Chris from New Zealand. Kia ora beans.
Kia ora, Chris.
Kia ora.
My last email was a very pissy missive about Henry eating on mic in some Patreon content.
I apologise for that. I've not done it since, to be fair. That hit home. It was gross. I apologise.
I have been through your back catalogue once more, as it is a very pleasant background while I do renovations and miscellaneous DIY tasks. May I present a deep cut reply to some old content from your glass episode?
Going all the way back.
We're not digging up that. We thought we'd laid that to rest.
It's not about whether you can drink a glass of glass. So,
okay. Yeah. That was Walter, wasn't it?
That was Walter. Yeah. We've not heard from Walter for a while.
Shout out to Walter. Yeah.
Send us proof of life, Walter. Yeah. In the episode, Ben mentions that he once drank a pear cider and then shat himself.
Oh. But as we now know, that was actually probably the three Scotch eggs, the Scotch egg smoothie you drank that morning. Yeah.
You also mentioned you had some friends who used to drink pear cider and then see who shat themselves first in a game of Russian roulette. That's true. I also play a dangerous game, one I call McSpicy Roulette. There is a McDonald's burger in New Zealand called the McSpicy.
What?
Which is one of those seasonal release limited time burgers they roll out once every year or two. Whenever it comes out, I go and get one, and every time I'm struck by intense diarrhea, the same or the next day. My partner noticed this. Brackets, it is hard to hide when sharing a small house. God. Close brackets. Jesus. And quite reasonably asked why I would continue ordering this when it gives me diarrhea every single time. Every single time so far, I responded.
Well,
I like that a lot.
People say the definition of madness, don't they? Is doing the same thing expecting different results. I actually don't think that is a good definition of madness, though.
I think a better definition of madness is like dressing up as Julius Caesar and going to the pub and making everyone buy drinks. And
unless you are Julius Caesar.
Yeah, fair enough.
or you really, really think you are. I mean, another one, for example, would be changing your name to Dr. Banana. That sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? That's I feel that's more doing the same thing and expecting to get different results just being a bit silly or a bit stubborn or whatever.
Every time so far, I responded, but sometimes you've got to roll the dice. One day my numbers will come up and I will win the game of McSpicy Roulette.
So at the moment, so basically he does a shit and it's a bit like, well, literally shooting crap or being at a casino. He does a shit and then he looks in the toilet and that's like seeing what dice he's rolled sort of thing. And he's looking for it to be a solid. No?
Well,
roll the dice.
It's an odd interpretation of what seems pretty straightforward.
Okay.
He says, my numbers will not come in. It is an unwinnable game. Brackets, arguably not even a game. However, I am now stubbornly dug in and see it as my duty to spin the wheel whenever the burger is available and to gently antagonise the love of my life. I get two rounds of joy each time now, when will I announce I'm going to go and get a McSpicy? And I either get an eye roll or an unintelligible frustrated noise. And when will I emerge from the toilet, where she gets genuinely frustrated and abuses me for giving myself diarrhea?
It's a hell of a picture, isn't it?
Diamond Harbour.
But this is why rom-coms end with the getting married, not 5 years into the marriage, isn't it? you don't want to see when Harry saying to Sally,
"I bought some McSpicy again."
Yeah, that burrito's giving me the squits again.
But also, okay, I've got a few comments to make here. One is, I'm hoping that she's just taking his word on it, in which case he could just lie to say he has done a solid.
But he's delighting in
that's not
antagonizing his girlfriend.
Yeah, but he doesn't want to get a solid. So what exactly is at stake in the casino of this situation? Because he is using gambling metaphors. He's talking about spinning the wheel.
Yeah.
Talking about roulette.
So I think he feels like he wins if he doesn't shit himself after a McSpicy. But when he loses, he also wins because he enjoys antagonizing his girlfriend for some reason.
So the house always wins?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, everyone wins, really, apart from his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Who I imagine will be leaving him soon. I mean,
Yeah.
Or maybe if you are able to do this in the relationship, it shows that you are on the strongest of...
I don't know. Well, it's not a very heavily populated area, is it? I mean, Chris might be the best that's going in that neck of the woods. You know?
That's true. Well, I would like to hear, Chris's partner could give her side of this story. I think I'd like to hear both sides.
Oh, yeah, that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
The other thing he could look into is buying one of those fake plastic turds. I'm not sure exactly what it does, but if you throw that into the mix, I don't know, does that change things?
Well, he's still in the bathroom having epic diarrhea, isn't he? Where's the plastic turd going?
Well, he could put that in the loo afterwards and say to her, "Look, I've done a solid.
Look, I've blocked the toilet with a plastic turd."
Shouldn't have flushed it, you fool.
Well, thank you for that, Chris. That was repulsive.
That was really, yeah, really good there.
Really enjoyed that.
Neil emails, play the Neil jingle. This is quite a Neil heavy.
Play the Neil jingle.
Yeah.
I mean, is it a jingle? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a jingle. Play it.
It's a jingle.
It's good.
Of course, it's a jingle.
Here he comes. It's your old friend Neil. He lives his life with uncommon zeal. He sent an email in to us, which we will now try to discuss.
Dear Beans, I just want to bring this to your attention. Mallorca has something called the Caves of Hams. Also, it appears you can buy a dinosaur land and Caves of Hams combined ticket. All the best, Neil.
Wow.
Well, Neil, that was very well judged. Thank you.
Perfectly judged. One of our best ever emails.
Does that ham look right to you? We'd normally now play the Patreon jingle that I made, but we're going to play a version sent in by one of our listeners.
Excellent.
There's every chance it will be in the genre of jungle.
Let's assume so.
Yeah.
This is from P. They say, "Here is my version of the Patreon jingle using automatone."
Oh, don't know what that is. Presumably some sort of keyboard that just spews out jungle.
Ah.
Good.
That's cool.
I like that. I thought that was quite Dune in a weird way.
Automaton, I looked it up. Yeah, I've seen these before. They're those things that look like a quaver. Those
Someone else also sent in an automaton one in the past. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, we've had it. Yeah.
Or it's like a little mouth that opens and closes.
Mm, little synthy.
Oh, it looks like a... I thought you meant the crisp, the quaver. I had to check it out. It's like a quaver for a musical notation.
Yeah, like a... Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was really cool. It was kind of futuristic and a bit medieval, like Dune, like the world of Dune.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was less haunting than the usual Patreon one as well.
Yeah,
it was more laid back and a bit breezy. It was nice.
Mm, I really liked it.
Yeah. Thanks for everyone who's been to patreon.com/3beansalad to sign
Thank
up.
You.
If you want to get ad-free episodes, if you want to listen to our bonus episodes, and if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout-out from Mike from the Sean Bean Lounge.
Oh, yeah.
Where Mike was last night.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the annual cricket match against the Indian national team, wasn't it?
It was. Thank you, Ben, and here's my report.
It was the annual cricket match versus the Indian national team last night at the Sean Bean Lounge. The Indian national A team were otherwise engaged performing at Derby Corn Exchange as high-end tribute band The Smashing Stumpkins. So an Indian national B team was hastily assembled with a tranche of Bean Loungers who were taken to the Indian consulate in the Sean Bean Lounge diplomatic quarter, where they renounced any active citizenships and were naturalised as citizens of the Republic of India. Abby Hiskey was declared team captain, with Daniel Chappell behind the wicket, Hawkon Sherwin square leg, Nicola Allen front of house, Mark Woosi top loader, Emak running midfield, Roger, science and technology, Drew Peacock scoring, and James Bullock on bass saxophone. Dan Gibbard won the toss and selected going for tea. That done with, it was Jill Beaton on the crease facing Ellie McTimony with a piping hot googly from downwind. Harley Francis was nutmegged on the 20-yard line, leaving Dan Heaford wide open to serve an ace up the umpire's sleeve, so to speak. Nicky Miller hit six, but it wasn't clear six what until it later emerged that Matt Lilly, Joe Empson, Senor Elliott, Chris Walter, Artie Kibbe and Kev Johnson were all missing. Having gotten away with it with Gigi Moo, Kate Saunders was caught out by Eleanor and then caught up again by Holly Slattery. Hannah Bevis was awarded her fourth red card this season for overpolishing the starboard side of Hilary Coe, causing her to overswing into the blind side of Matt Tymon. Maddie showed fast spinner Ross McDermott the hairy side of the bat, leaving Barry Horse and his orchestral sauce with nothing to do but dust off those pom-poms and dance. John Young declared early, but failed to do so in writing, allowing Esma Harris to bounce him out of the dugout for a golden goose. Meanwhile, Max Stutis Jeffrey was unable to get out of the changing room loose owing to slippery mittens, and Chris and Chaz failed to show up in the proper kit and had to play in vest and pants. On the fullback line, Lucy tried and failed to start a Mexican wave, Gemma Bell completed an unprecedented six-day streak on Duolingo, and Nick was taken into witness protection. And in the red corner, Stephanie Hutt choked out Tom Selby and the Frog Brothers, allowing Alyssa the Worm Thorne all the time in the world to half-volley a hat-trick into the back of the net. Touchdown!
Okay, that's the end of the show. We'll play out with a version of our theme tune sent in by one of you. This is from Andy.
Thank you, Andy.
In North Bremen.
Mm.
He says, I'm not a music man, but I've had a good go at it. Unfortunately, my dear old mother decided to vacuum during the recording, which set off the dog. I've done my best to remove these unsolicited noises from the mix, but you might still be able to hear them if you listen closely.
Pink Floyd had that problem, didn't they? On Wish You Were Here. there's a brief bit of vacuum and dog you can find. It happens to the best of them.
Here we go.
Thank you, bye.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.
Cheerio, bye.
I don't think the dog sounds that bad.
Quite a rhythmic dog.
Yeah. And the vac. Yeah. I think he made the right call to leave it in.